Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Washington claims to be the leader of the world. However, if the United States is the global leader, then the world is in deep trouble. Indecisiveness, contradictions, and total unpredictability seem to be the status quo for Washington. No guarantee that international agreements will be implemented, from Iran's nuclear deal to climate control to agreement with Cuba. Has the U.S. lost its legitimacy? Stay with us as we take a look at this on this debate.
Back in 2014, former U.S. President Barack Obama made a historic move to initiate a rapprochement with Cuba following decades of bitter confrontation. In 2016, Obama was the first sitting U.S. president to travel to the island nation after over 90 years. The two arch foes agreed ties could not be amended overnight but took major steps to normalize them. Embassies were opened in the two countries and travel and trade began to grow. The civilized diplomacy efforts, however, now seem to be down to the drain, with new U.S. President Donald Trump announcing a new policy on Cuba.
Effective immediately, I am canceling the last administration's completely one-sided deal with Cuba.
Trump says the Cuban government takes the profit made from investment and tourism and spends it on the military. He claims his new policy would benefit the Cuban people and support the democratic movement in the country. The Republican president's new measures renew travel and trade restrictions and keep in place some penalties and embargoes on Cuba.
I think that this must create a lot of consternation among many organizations in the U.S. and, of course, businesses that see the possibility of restrictions on the announcements by Trump. This goes entirely against the will of the American people. The poll last year by the Pew Poll Research Organization found that 73% of people of the U.S. want the end of what is called in the media the embargo, but what we call the blockade, because it's far more extensive than just a trade ban.
Havana was quick to respond. In a statement, the Cuban government rejected what it called the hostile rhetoric of President Donald Trump. The statement said Trump's speech was loaded with hostility and recalled the times of open confrontation. Havana, however, maintained a conciliatory tone, saying it is still ready to continue respectful dialogue with the U.S. on topics of mutual interest. Washington's U-turn on Cuba drew reactions in Venezuela as well. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro says Trump has embarked on a new cycle of aggression.
It's not possible that in the 21st century, Donald Trump can say that he will maintain and worsen the blockade against the Cuban people, which we reject. From Venezuela, we rejected it. From the ALBA, and I am sure that the international conscience rejects Donald Trump's threats against the people of Cuba.
The United States severed ties with its former colony Cuba in 1961 after then-Cuban President Fidel Castro's revolution. Washington has been trying to topple the government ever since through imposing harsh sanctions, a failed policy which the U.S. has applied in many other countries around the globe.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, Latin American expert Dennis Small out of Leesburg, and columnist from The Hill, Brent Budowski out of Washington, D.C. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in D.C., Brent Budowski. Why the flip-flop on Cuba, in your perspective? What exactly is behind this?
Well, first of all, for the record, I do not agree with what Trump just did. I agreed with the opening that President Obama had done before. The reason is President Trump is feeling a lot of pressure on the Russia scandals and the investigations that are almost totally dominating American news and American politics. He's been unable to get any major legislation through the House and the Senate so he could sign it so far. He's 0 for everything in terms of Congress passing anything that he wanted. And so he's looking for things to do basically to appease his more conservative base. I think it's really that simple. This was something he could do for now without Congress. And so he went ahead and did it. I think it was a mistake. I think it was unwise. I think he'll find that even in Florida, in the Cuban American community, The younger Cuban Americans don't agree with Trump. It's not the way it used to be 20 years ago, where everybody in the Cuban American community wanted the embargo and wanted the boycott. So I think he did it for political reasons. I hope it won't last long. There are a lot of Americans, myself included, including many in business, including some Republicans, not all Republicans, who want the opening to continue. It was very helpful to the Cuban people and the American people and generally the cause of democracy when, after the agreement, there was major freedom of the internet increased in Cuba resulting from that agreement. That was good. That is something that everybody who believes in a free debate should want. Let's hope that Trump doesn't reverse that, that the Cubans don't reverse it. Their response was fairly open-minded from Havana, which I think was useful. But he did it for political reasons, okay. And I think it's a mistake, no doubt about it.
All right. Well, Dennis Small, do you think that the United States is losing its legitimacy as the so-called leader in the world?
Well, I think there's a new leadership emerging in the world, but I don't think it's right to frame it the way you have, if I may be perfectly frank about it. The new leadership that's emerging has to do with the Belt and Road Initiative coming out of China in particular, but with the countries representing more than half the population of the planet, who just had a rather extraordinary summit meeting in Beijing, laying out an entirely different economic approach and political approach globally, which has everything to do with events such as the recent changes in U.S. policy around Cuba. I would agree with Brent on the question of the mistake in the policy. That is to say, I think that sanctions never work. They never have worked. They're a totally mistaken and misguided way of approaching policy. But that may be the beginning and the end of our points of agreement. I'm not sure. We'll have to see. Trump came into office making a number of commitments. He said that he was against the era of regime change and overthrowing governments abroad, which had been the U.S. policy pretty much consistently for the last 16 years, under Bush and Obama as well. He came into office saying that there would be no entanglements such as Syria and Iraq and so on and so forth. And he came into office saying he wanted to improve relations with Russia and China. I think on the Russia and China front, there have been some important advances, despite the fact that he's been subjected to withering fire and attack, which really resembles, in my mind, a McCarthyite type of phenomenon in the United States, for his simple attempt to try to reverse policy that had existed previously and get on a solid track with Russia and China. And I think that you need to look, therefore, at the Trump administration, not so much as a single monolith, but really like a war zone or operating in a war zone in Washington, which is a very complex situation, which relates directly to this question of China and the Belt and Road Initiative, which I mentioned at the outset of my comment.
Okay. Well, Brent Podolsky, isn't it ironic that the two feeds for the Obama administration were allegedly Obamacare and the Cuban rapprochement? Donald Trump is trying to annul or overthrow both of these. Aren't these types of actions fatal for a country like the United States when other countries cannot take the U.S. at its word or can take it seriously as far as consistency in policy?
Well, I think these actions are a bad mistake. I think they hurt the United States. They alienate many of our best allies in the world. I don't agree with what the president did on the Paris Accords on climate change. I think that was a horrible mistake. When he met with the Pope, who handed him his encyclical, the Pope papal encyclical on climate change, Trump said, "I'll always remember what you say." I'd like to know what the Pope said that he remembered. But it wasn't to support climate change. And that obviously alienated almost all the democratic countries everywhere in the world and just about every other country in the world. So that was a mistake. So we have to go through a period where Trump is trying to decide, number one, what he actually believes in as policy. I think when he campaigned, he really didn't know much about what he was talking about. And many top Republicans, as well as Democrats, agree with that. He didn't know what he was talking about. He's making choices, I think, for the wrong reason, politics, and the wrong choices on Cuba, on climate change, and other issues.
Who do you think he's relying upon? Sorry to interrupt you, Brent Podolsky, but his closest individuals right now, especially in dealing with the Cuban situation, whose advice do you think he's relying upon and have the greatest influence on him with this issue?
Well, on Cuba, I suspect it was just the right wing in the United States, who is not always happy with him right now. He's running out of supporters in the polls. There was one poll that came out this week that showed his unpopularity at 64%. So what he's doing, we call it in America, playing to his base, the most conservative people on those issues. And I think on Cuba, that's what it is. I think on climate change, he got a lot of campaign money from big polluters, companies with major financial interests in pollution. And even the major oil companies, believe it or not, actually wanted him to sign, stay with the Paris Accords. But on things like the Paris Accords, on other issues like immigration, I think he's listening to people such as Steve Bannon, people who believe in what he calls America First, and what many of us have argued, will leave America alone, not first. Mm-hmm. So we're at the beginning of a great debate here. Donald Trump, I would emphasize for our audience, just based on the polls, is very unpopular compared to all other previous presidents at this point.
Okay.
So I would not assume that what we're doing today is what he's doing tomorrow. The fight has only begun.
All right. Well, Dennis Ma, when there are more than 70% of Americans who are against sanctions against Cuba and against downgrading, actually, relations, why doesn't the president respect the wishes of the majority?
Well, the issue is, if you look at not only the Cuba question, but other questions, what the polls show is not necessarily what people will do, politicians, and it's certainly not necessarily the direction that the country will take. Now, we have to take a step back from this. You can't look at the Cuba question in isolation, nor at the Trump administration in terms of simply a series of specific policies. It's a mistake to, in my view, to look at, for example, the issue of Obamacare and the issue of the Paris Accords as if it were the same thing as the Cuba policy. The Obamacare policy was a disaster. And if you looked at the polls, if you do care to look at polls across the board, you will see that the vast majority of Americans are completely opposed to Obamacare. The current Republican replacement for that is equally bad or worse. But that does not make Obamacare good. Obamacare was put in place by the large financial institutions that run Wall Street and the big pharma and the big health insurance companies, and it was completely a boondoggle to pass money through the government to those companies. Mm-hmm. It was a disaster, and the health situation in the United States has declined radically. As for the Paris Accords, the simple fact of the matter is that the policy behind the Paris Accords has nothing actually to do with trying to improve the pollution situation or climate and so on and so forth, but it's actually a Malthusian policy designed to implement on countries around the world a not only denuclear policy, but a decarbonization policy. And the main proponents of this and the authors of these accords are those who propose reducing the world's population down from 7 billion people closer to 1 billion, which is why the countries such as China or Russia, for example, which has not signed this at all, but China has adopted it very carefully, saying, yes, but we're going to do this our way, and we are not simply going to decarbonize. I think when I say you have to take a step back, and I would suggest that this is the proper framework for this policy discussion. You're talking about a global financial system in the Western financial system, which is completely bankrupt. We're talking about $1.5 quadrillion in financial assets, which have no way of being paid back no matter what is done. And those Wall Street and City of London interests have adopted a policy to try to get that paid and destroy economies around the world, whatever it takes to do that. There is a contrary policy which has now come into shape. I repeat, it is what the Chinese have developed around the Belt and Road Initiative, which many countries throughout Eurasia have adopted. And the big question, the single biggest question on the Trump agenda is, will he or will he not join the majority of the world in that Belt and Road Initiative. To his credit, he sent a high-level representative to that Beijing meeting, and to his credit, he has talked, but has not yet done, the adoption of the old policy of Glass-Steagall, which would wipe out the financial speculation in Wall Street. Those, I think, are the, that's the actual forest, which we shouldn't miss for looking at the trees.
Okay. Well, Brent Podolsky, looking at the situation in Cuba specifically, why is it that former American political prisoner Assata Shakura is always brought up by American presidents when dealing with Cuba? Obama doubled the bounty on her head as soon as he came to power. And now Trump has said that the almost 70-year-old former Black Panther must be returned by Cuba. Why is this so important for these American presidents?
Well, to most people, it isn't. And to previous American president, it isn't that important. He's looking for issues that will play to his radical conservative right-wing base.
It was important enough for Barack Obama to actually double the bounty on her head, one of the first actions, as a matter of fact, that he took after becoming president. So it does seem to be important to at least these two last presidents.
Well, but in the context with Obama of trying to have better diplomatic relations and opening relations, that was the context for what Obama did. Now, I want to briefly talk about, just for a second, about Trump and banks. When he talks about Glass-Steagall and breaking up big banks, he's absolutely full of nonsense. That's a big fraud. The House Republicans passed another one of these bank bailout kind of bills on the very day that the former FBI director, James Comey, was testifying about the Russia scandal. So there is not a drop of interest anywhere in the Republican Party about major bank reform. They're going in the opposite way.
So there's
they
no draining the swamp. There's
the
no draining the swamp
that,
by the Trump.
Yeah.
The President Trump is not draining the swamp
he's
in your perspective.
He's making it bigger. He is the swamp.
Are you saying that you, Mr. Podolsky, are opposed to Glass-Steagall? Or do you think that that's a policy that should be adopted, just to be clear?
Oh, I believe Glass-Steagall should be brought back. I believe the bank should be broken up. I believe that what you have right now that passed the House is a giveaway to the banks done by the Republican Party with winks and nods by Donald Trump. I think Trump has brought in politically more crony capitalism throughout his presidency than any president in memory. And man, that's saying a lot in our country. We have too much crony capitalism.
Well, you know,
stay
with me, both of you. Of course, very interesting discussion, but I want to stay on cue specifically. Looking at the situation with Cuba, in your perspective, Dennis Ma, will the United States, with these type of actions, become more and more isolated? We've seen in the latest action, for example, increasing Russian sanctions by Washington, that the Austrians and the Germans have warned the U.S. about doing this. And we have other situations where we were talking about the Iran nuclear deal, that the Europeans are not so happy, and even with this Cuban situation, that actually a lot of Americans themselves are not so happy about this. So your take on that?
Yeah, I think, for example, the increased economic sanctions on Russia are completely counterproductive and destructive. And I was glad to see that both the German and the Austrian foreign ministers came out with a joint statement against that. The fact of the matter is, if you actually look at what has happened inside the Trump administration, Trump did come in with the intention and still has the intention of reducing those sanctions. But like I said, it's a war zone. It's a battlefield on this thing. And if I may say, it is not a side trip or a tangent to discuss Glass-Steagall when you're trying to get a clear bead on the question of Cuba, because Glass-Steagall actually would put a major crimp in the plan, more than a crimp, it would wipe out the speculative bubble of Wall Street. So the point on this is that there's a number of Democrats. There are a couple of bills before Congress in both the House and the Senate side. They're bipartisan. There are Democrats and Republicans alike that are proposing this. President Trump has said he is in favor of Glass-Steagall, and honest Democrats who are in favor of the right policy, wherever it's coming from, have said that they will work with President Trump on this. And I refer to Marcy Kaptur, for example, from the Rust Belt of the United States, Tulsi Gabbard, and many others. So that there clearly is the possibility, if we should decide to do this, for a bipartisan approach to put together a policy that will destroy the speculative financial interests that are behind all of these policies, including regime change, including these crazy sanctions policies, wherever they're applied, whether it be Cuba, Russia, Iran, or whatever.
Brent Podesta, let me get Brent back in here. Brent, you're laughing. Tell me what's on your mind. Go ahead.
The Republicans in the House did exactly the opposite of bringing back Glass-Steagall. Of course, we'd all work with President Trump. That we would all work with President Trump. I propose this myself, that they want to bring back Glass-Steagall. But what the Republicans in the House did, thinking no one was watching because everybody was watching the FBI director testify about the Russia scandal, that they thought they could get away with it. Now, that bill in the House will not pass the Senate. The problem is that Trump, or at least the Republicans right now, are going in the opposite direction of giving even more benefits to big banks. But yeah, if Trump wants to really do Glass-Steagall, which I'll make a wager with anyone he does not, but if he does, we will all welcome him with open arms and work with him to bring Glass-Steagall back, I promise.
Okay, just 1 minute. I just have a minute left. Dennis Small, how do you think this latest action by Washington against Havana will affect each one, meaning the United States and Cuba?
I think that it'll be very detrimental to the United States and our foreign policy. It'll probably have some economic impact on Cuba, which would not be good for them. But the effect on the United States in terms of maintaining the approach, which has not functioned for 50 years or 60 years now, is a very bad approach. And I think that President Trump is going to have to switch gears and switch gears very seriously.
Okay. I'm sorry, on that note, I have to end it. Love to talk to you guys another time. Appreciate you being with us. Latin American expert Dennis Small out of Leesburg and out of Washington, D.C., columnist from The Hill, Brent Podesta. And as always, viewers, pleasure being with you on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.